She was a slave woman. Hagar. We know that she was from Egypt. So she had dark skin. We don't know how she fell into slavery or was captured or imprisoned, but we do know this. She was owned. As a human being, she was owned by Sarah, Abraham's wife. And in the book of Genesis, we hear about how God promised a child to Abraham and Sarah, but God made them wait, as God often does with us. And Sarah couldn't believe the promise, and so she told Abraham, "Just take my slave woman, have a baby with her." So Hagar's body was used to have a child. And she did get pregnant, and I imagine she thought that Sarah would have cherished her for that. But instead, Sarah got jealous of Hagar and started abusing her. And it became so bad that Hagar ran away into the desert. It's one thing to run away in Jacksonville. It's another thing to run away into the desert where there's no water and no food. But that's how bad it was for Hagar. But God told her to go back, that God would redeem her suffering. So Hagar returns to her setting of oppression. 14 years later, Sarah finally becomes pregnant. Hagar must have been so relieved. And everything goes well, and the child Isaac is born. And when the child is weaned, it was traditional for the father to host a feast. So Abraham hosts this huge feast for all of his slaves and neighbors and family and everyone, and they all come together. And Hagar is there with her son. And he's laughing, and he's playing with little Isaac, who's probably just toddling around, barely walking. And Sarah sees those two boys playing together. And again, this rivalrous, jealous, envious person rises up in Sarah. And she calls Abraham aside and says, "I don't want my son to inherit anything with the son of that slave woman. I want you to cast her out, her and her son. Get rid of them." Abraham is distraught. Technically, Hagar belongs to his wife, but he loves her and his son. So he goes to God and says, "This seems," in the Hebrew it says, "this seems evil in my sight. This seems evil." And God says, "Do not worry, I will make good of the evil." So Abraham gets a skin of water, places it over Hagar's shoulder and gives her bread, and she holds her son's hand and they walk out into the desert. They walk, and they walk, and they walk, until they're dehydrated and the water is gone. Her son is now 14 years old, but he must have been faint from dehydration because she lies him under a bush. And it says that she goes a bow shot away so she can see him. But she says to God, "I cannot watch my son die." And And an angel comes and says, Hagar, I've heard the cry of your son. Rise. Rise up and look. So Hagar stands up and looks around, and she sees a well. A well was right there. She was just so full of despair that she couldn't see it. She gets her son, gives him a drink, fills her water skin. And the angel says to her, do not worry. Your son will be a father of nations. So yesterday I had the day off, and I try to do something different on my day off, something that's, you know, not church related, and that sometimes involves me making a mess. So many of you know when I married Chris, I wanted him to move to Jacksonville because I love you. And he said, if you can find a house on the water, I will move to Jacksonville. So I started looking everywhere. Now, I had never thought I would live on the water, but with Chris being a doctor, we could afford a small place on the water. So we found a beautiful home, and it's on a harbor in Ortega Forest. But I have realized that when you live on the water, everything rots really fast. And on the side of our house, there are these big bushes, but three of them had completely rotted, and they were dead. And I had tried to get a gardener to come and cut them down, but nobody was calling me back, and I get impatient. So yesterday I said, I'm going to cut them down myself. So I went to Lowe's, and I bought one of those real big saws, the electric kind. I know it sounds dangerous. I got goggles, though, and I read the instructions. But before I started to cut down these big bushes, I started just pulling on them. And it turns out that the soil was so moist and they were so dead that I literally could wrestle them out of the ground, roots and all. And man, did I feel strong. So I dragged these big bushes over to the curb thinking, look, the neighbors should watch me now, you know. And it was a big mess with dirt and roots everywhere, but it felt so good to just tear into that stuff. And it was a big mess, and I had a great time. We call the gospel today good news, but it sounds like a great big mess. I always have wondered how we have some kinds of Christian theology that make us think that if we have the perfect family with children that never disagree and obey their parents, that that's because God loves us and we're following Jesus the right way. Because I don't read anything like that in the gospel. In fact, Jesus talks about basically tearing things apart, ripping them up by their roots. He talks about bringing a sword to the earth. You see, this world that we live in is beautiful and magnificent, but it's also interwoven with evil and darkness. And Jesus is talking about pulling out the bad stuff, like we would weed a garden, cutting off the dead limbs with a sword. He talks about making a big fat mess. And in the midst of all of that, he says there's going to be a lot of conflict in families between fathers and sons and mothers and daughters. There's going to be a lot of struggle. There's going to be a lot of suffering. But I want you to rise, take up your cross, and follow me. And the things that you want to hide in the darkness, bring them into the light. The things that are in the shadows, don't be embarrassed. Show them to the world. What was Jesus talking about? It was very similar to the words that the angel says to Hagar. I know you're in the dust. I know you've been a slave. I know things are horrible. Stand up, rise up, and look around. I will show you where to go. I will show you where the water is. I will bring you new life. So every one of you has had to suffer in some way. You can't live in this world without struggling. It's like if you tried to go out in the rainstorms, you know how we have these afternoon rainstorms. If you went out in the middle of a rainstorm and tried not to get wet, look, you're going to get wet. You're going to suffer. Things are hard in this world. But what Jesus is saying is that your suffering is the place where God does the best work. If you have cancer, lift it up and follow Jesus with it. If you have a struggle with addiction, lift it up and use it to follow Jesus and help others. If you have been through a terrible divorce, lift it up and use it to follow Jesus. What we want to do is hide the things that are hardest in our lives. We want to pretend they didn't happen. Someone asks us how we are, we say, fine, good. Jesus is saying, stop hiding. Take your pain and whatever it is that you struggle with, lift it up and follow me. Were you hurt as a child? Lift it up and serve children. Did you struggle with poverty? Lift it up and serve God with it. I don't know what your individual cross is, and if you want to visit with me sometime, I'll help you find it. And sometimes in the course of your life, it will change because you'll go through something really hard, and that will become your cross. But I do know this, that it's when you're sitting in the dust and feeling the most hopeless, like Hagar, that is when God is most powerful. When God says to you, rise up in the midst of all of it, pick it up, use it to serve me. That's how we find grace and goodness and light, not by fixing the world, but by lifting up our cross and following Christ and letting God do the fixing. The good news is really good, but it's also really hard. The job of a disciple is incredibly challenging, and it takes great courage, like Hagar's courage, to rise up. Lift up your cross and follow him.